ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನ ರಂಜನ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರಬನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಮುನಾ ತೀರಬನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಶಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಾತೆ ಜವಾಂಗ್ವೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಶಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಾತ್ ಜವಾಂಗ್ವೈ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಗೌಡ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಅನಂತ ಕೋತಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕಿ ಇಸ್ಕೋಂ ಫಂದರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಶಿಮಂ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕಿ ಇತಾಯಿ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಶಿಶಿ ಗುರು ವಂಶಿ ಗೌರಂಗ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creation, Chapter 3, Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender, text number 4. Jaswatmani dan nijamaya jarpitam Kvachit vibhatan kvachatati rohitam ಅಭಿಧದೃಕ್ಷಕ್ಷ್ಯುಭಜಂ ತತ್ ಇಕ್ಷತೆ ಸ ಆತ್ಮಮೂಲೋ ಬತು ಮನ್ ಪರತ್ಪರ ಸ್ವಸ್ವತ್ಮನಿದಂ ನಿಜಮಾಯ ಜರ್ಪಿತಂ ಕ್ವಚಿತ್ विभातन क्वचतत्तिरोहितम् आभिधद्रिक्षक्ष्युभजं तत् इक्षते स आत्ममूलो भवतु मम परात्परा जस्वत्मनीदं निजमाजर्पितम् क्वचित् विभातन् क्वच तत्तिरोहितम् आभिधदृक्षक्ष्युभजं तत् इष्यते स आत्ममूलो भवतु मम परात्परा क्रिश्चन् Jaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who? Swatmani, in Him, Idam, this cosmic manifestation, Nijamajaya, by His own potency, Arpitam, invested. Quachit, sometimes at the beginning of a kalpa, vibhatam, it is manifested. Quacha, sometimes during dissolution, that manifestation, tirohitam, not visible. Abhidhatrik, he sees everything in all these circumstances. Shakshi, the witness, Ubhajam, both manifestation and annihilation. Tat ikshate, sees everything without loss of sight. Saha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sorry, right, that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atmamulaha, self-sufficient, having no other cause. Abhatu, please give protection. Mam, unto me. Parat paraha, He is transcendental to transcendental, or above all transcendence. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding His own energy, keeps the cosmic manifestation visible and again sometimes render it invisible. He is both the supreme cause and the supreme result, the observer and the witness in all circumstances. Thus, He is transcendental to everything. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has multipotencies, parasya shaktir vidadaiva shrujate. Therefore, as soon as He likes, He uses one of His potencies, and by that expansion He creates the cosmic manifestation. Again, when the cosmic manifestation is annihilated, it rests in Him. Nonetheless, He is infallible, the supreme observer, infallibly the supreme observer. Under any circumstances, the Supreme Lord is chainless. He is simply a witness and is aloof from all creation and annihilation. Ya swatmani dan nijamaya jarpitam kvachit vibhatan kvachatat tirohitam avidhadrik shakshi ubhajanta ikshate sat atma mulo batumam parat paraha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding His own energies, keeps this cosmic manifestation visible and again sometimes render it invisible. He is both the supreme cause and the supreme result, the observer and the witness in all circumstances. Thus He is transcendental to everything. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyari Satarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. There's a very important approach that one has to have in order to fully offer not only devotional service, but actually to fully surrender to the Personality of Godhead. And that is to understand how great He is, and how not only great but actually inconceivably great, to naturally being able to surrender, to have full faith and place oneself, you know, at you know, under the protection, under the shelter of Krishna. That's something that is very strongly presented and consistently presented in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna Himself when He's, you know, explaining the whole science of God. And is one thing that we find is, and the scripture tells us that to understand the Personality of Godhead for the ordinary living entity is impossible. It's impossible to actually, just by our prowess, the human intellect, to understand how great God is. In general, For that sometimes, ordinary people can approach is just to have, you create, it's almost like, better, you don't discuss about it. You just have faith that there's something great out there. But how is inconceivable. And there is a verse in the Brahma Sangita, no, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Navabet Grahyam Indriya, by our blown senses, we cannot approach the understanding of the personality of God. There is no way to understand. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains why, because is the Raja Guhyam is actually a secret. It's the king of all secrets. It's the king of it is very what is the word that is used? Is when it's something very personal, what is that? Confidential. Correct, thanks. The most confidential knowledge, right? So it's very confidential. It's not something that is open to anyone. And in the ninth chapter, which is the heart of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna fully reveals, the most confidential knowledge, devotional service, when he starts to explain to Arjuna, now he's going to explain about devotional service, which is basically what he's been talking along to Arjuna throughout. I mean, you guys are sort of, at least the devotees who are doing the Bhakti Shastri right now, you're reviewing chapter 1 to 9. And, Krishna presented first to Arjuna this path, this knowledge, that even a little advancement that you make in this knowledge, in this path, then can save you of the greatest danger. So he explains to Arjuna the path of devotional service. And as he goes, well, now he's going to, in chapter 9, he's going to fully explain it. And so listen carefully, they said to Arjuna, I'm going to reveal this to you. Well, you have the qualifications. You're my devotee and you're not envious. And devotional service is the king of all knowledge. And it's also the greatest secret. It's the most confidential knowledge. And if you're able to receive this transcendental knowledge of devotional service, then is the perfection of religion because it allows you to experience the self by realization. That's what it says, Pratyaksha Bhagavan Dharmyam. That by you personally, you have a personal experience of this greatest knowledge. So it's not something that is just a book knowledge, but it's experiential. And you also start to experience, happiness, which is what we're looking for. Susukam kartun abhyayam. And Krishna says that, so it's through devotional service that we'll be able to understand this greatest, most confidential knowledge. It's devotional service will allow us to receive that. And so, not by our blown senses, not by our intelligence, not by our minds that we're ever going to conceive this, because the greatness of Krishna is just beyond comprehension. If
human comprehension. So so we have to have faith. We have to have faith in Krishna. But to have faith in Krishna, you have to understand who Krishna is. Krishna says, you know, that the importance of having faith on him and the path of devotional service that he's given, the instruction that he's given, because if we don't have faith on that, he says, what is the result of for those who are those who are not faithful? That, you know, mitru samsara barmani, you know, the following verse of that, that for those who have not faith, repeated birth and death, basically, that is the result. So devotional service is that knowledge that if devotional service is not present, the result will be repeated birth and death. And that is for any from, you know, unfaithful persons to karma bodies, to Brahma bodies, to yogis. If devotional service is not present, then it's repeated birth and death. Regardless, even if one is in a transcendental path, if he's not under the umbrella of devotional service, then it will be repeated birth and death. That's what Krishna said. So, to have that faith, the first thing, so the first thing that Krishna started to explain when he started to explain to Arjuna this most confidential knowledge, what is that first section of the ninth chapter that Krishna started to explain? This Aishwarya Gyan, which is, you know, the knowledge of Krishna's inconceivable potencies. This Parasya Shaktir Vidadayu Srujate, that it's inconceivable because what from verses 9:4 to 9:10, Krishna explains this achintya shakti. Achintya means inconceivable. Inconceivable because one hears what he says and say, well, he says, you know, everything is white, but then everything is black. You know, so you have all these contrary, opposing things that he's saying with one, in one verse he says something and the next verse he contradicts it. So there's this whole apparent contradiction that that Krishna presents, but the things he says simultaneously, they're there. So the achintya veda veda tattva, this conception of, you know, oneness and difference, these conceptions of opposing, contradictory things simultaneously being present and fully manifested. So to understand that is inconceivable. It's inconceivable. That's what the achintya. So Krishna says, as he says that, he says, you know, just behold my mystic potencies, yoga aishwaram. So that's how great he is. I'm going to read text in the Bhagavad Gita 4 to 10, and then maybe we can, you know, try to break it down a little bit. So this is right as he starts to explain the first thing is, you know, this yoga aishwaryam, this aishwarya gyan, as he starts to reveal to Arjuna in more detail the most confidential knowledge. He says, by me, in my own manifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Sanskrit that he uses for all beings are in me is Matstani Sarvabhutani. Matstani Sarvabhutani. He say, all beings are in me, are situated in me. The next verse, he says, Na cha mat stani bhutani. The contrary song. That he say, now all beings are not in me. So, this is how Krishna is speaking. So, again, we read them all together. By me, in my own manifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them. And yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I'm the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I'm not part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this world cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So, Krishna is the perfect example when we talk about of the perfect manager. That, you know, people write books about, you know, how to be, you know, a very, very good manager. Basically, how you can empower someone, how say, delegate. You delegate powers, you know, to someone. So you may be sitting in your office, you know, sort of like doing certain things, or and at the same time, so many things are happening in some big corporation. You know, you may, you know, someone like, I don't know, what's the name of the Microsoft guy? Bill Gates, in this huge, huge enterprise, worldwide enterprise is happening. Meanwhile, he's just figured out the next, you know, thing that he's going to add to his whatever company. So, great managers, you know, they write books. But no manager is like Krishna. He's inconceivably, because just think about it. Prabhupada's example of how great Krishna is and the way he's managed this whole creation. You know, when we speak about the creation and how everything that is there, he's all pervaded in the creation. He's explained that he says that everything rests on him. Everything that is created rests on him. And so when we have someone that things are supported by him, by someone, so say if you have something that you're the full, total support of that, then automatically there's an involvement, there's an emotional involvement with it for that to be able to exist. You know, if something is fully supported by you, suppose like you're a family person, your family, you're supporting your family, your children depends on you. So there's a natural connection that happens. There's no such a thing as a detached parent. The natural thing is that the parents, there's an attachment. There's an attachment to what you're supporting. There is a connection. And so Krishna is so powerful that he's so involved that everything is connected to him, but at the same time, he is detached from everything. And he can do that to his transcendental potencies. So we have this whole cosmic manifestation, not only, you know, not only the material, but also the spiritual. So many things are going on. So many things are going on. But Krishna is present in his own planet, Goloka Vrindavan, just playing. While this whole thing is happening and all changes and things, you know, wars have been created, things have been annihilated, you know, this gigantic cosmic manifestation, there's in this tiny little planet, there is some difficulty, some wars, I think, and people are fighting, and these people are insulting, these people are killing, this, and this whole thing is happening. Then things have been taking place, things are moving around, so much is happening. Krishna, meanwhile, is simply enjoying with his cowherd friends, you know, running down the hill, and some bunch of cowherd boys are running after Krishna, trying to touch Krishna, and someone is stealing the lunch, and then he's dancing with the gopis, you know, like that, and then Mother Yasoda, you know, is feeding him, and that's what Krishna does. So, you know, if we have, for example, imagine have as someone who is the head of a particular, you know, institution or corporation. Say, for example, we have a temple president that you have never seen. And then when you find about him, oh yeah, he's just playing golf, you know, down the road, you know. And, well, but Prabhu, you know, we have this difficulty. There's no one, you know, doing who's doing the cooking and thing. Where's the leader? No, he's just, you know, down the road in his home, just watching movies, you know, something like that, or playing with his friends. You know, so, you know, what kind of, you know, it's impossible to have, you know, someone being controlling, you know, something so complex without being involved. But Krishna is simultaneously completely detached, completely separated from it. And at the same time, he's fully on the top of the thing. So much that he's, you know, he's present everywhere. And he's conscious directly and indirectly of everything. He's so involved, but at the same time he's not. Behold his mystic opulences. Behold his capacity of managing. And how great he is. So from the perspective of Krishna, through his energy, through his will, automatically everything is taken care of. That verse, Parashya Shaktir, Vidadai Vashrujate, that he has unlimited, inconceivable potencies, and by his potencies, automatically everything is taken care of. And what is automatically is not like a robot thing, it's a very conscious thing. It's not, you know, like you have an automatic a machine just like, you know, taking care of things, that it doesn't have, you know, a consciousness. Each of Krishna's energies is fully conscious. Each one is an expansion of himself. You know, and his supreme consciousness is fully present in each one of them. And in this way, he covers everything, the whole thing. So from Krishna's perspective, just by his expansions, he's able to carry everything, being fully involved. From our perspective, you know, how great Krishna is, how inconceivably great he is. Even just from the perspective of who we are, Prabhupada gives the example, there's a famous quote of him with, at that time, Brahmananda Prabhu, just explaining how tiny we are. So, here, you know, in this building, there are billions of living entities, spirit souls. You know, just within this table, on the, of the microphone, or, you know, the space, you know, under the walls, there's so many living entities that are living in this space. And we are one of those living entities that, you know, is sitting in this room, which is one of the rooms of this building, one of the many rooms of these buildings, which is, this building is within one of the many buildings that is in this neighborhood, which is one of the many neighborhoods that is in this city, which is one of the many cities that is in this country, which is one of the many countries that is in this continent, which is one of the many continents that is in this world, which is one of the many, and then you go like that. You know, this world is one of the many planets among this, you know, how you say, the planetary system, which is one of the many, you know, among this universe, which is this universe, which is considered, is just, the scripture tells us that this universe is like a, it's like a mustard seed in a huge bag of mustard seed. So a mustard seed is even smaller, you know, it's like a tiny little thing, you know. So imagine one mustard seed in a huge, you know, 1-ton bag of mustard seeds. It's tiny and inconceivable. So, and all these all these universes, there come out of one of the pores of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Mahavishnu. And Lord Mahavishnu is an expansion of Shankarshan, who is an expansion of Mahasankarshan, who is an expansion of Lord Balaram, who is the first expansion of Lord Krishna, who is a cowherd boy who's playing his flute and playing with his cowherd friends, you know, in Vrindavan. So there he is. How great he is and how tiny we are. Krishna is Vidur. He is inconceivably great, unlimitedly great. And we are Anu, which is, you know, like unlimitedly small, you know, something like very, very tiny. So when we come to know this, the first item of fully in receiving this most transcendental and greatest body of knowledge, the knowledge of devotional service, is that we have to understand Krishna's position. Therefore, the scriptures, the bhakti shastras, they always establish in great detail Krishna's greatness, even before going into a more intimate connection and relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada explains that if we don't establish first in ourselves our faith in Krishna's greatness, then the most like result of that is that we become sahajas. And sahajas means that one takes everything very cheaply. It doesn't have substance. It's just, you know, a shell manifestation of devotion. No substance. Because it's based on just a sentimental thing, which is, you know, what people sometimes externally, they may see of devotees, or, you know, the usual criticism that ignorant people sometimes does towards devotional service. Even during Lord Chaitanya's time, he was questioned like that, you know, this is all sentimental, you know, you're singing and dancing like that, you know, what is the substance of that? Usually when you see people constantly, you know, being, you know, singing and dancing and all, you know, and like that, okay, but you know, that's good for some time, but now let's get into some serious business, you know. So but that is when the substance is there, there is an amazing, huge body of knowledge, of philosophy that is behind, that that just supports those activities, the activities of devotional service. But if we don't have the understanding of Krishna's greatness, then it will be the substance won't be there. So first, what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to say, first deserve, then desire. First deserve, then desire. The deserve part is that we have to connect with Krishna and have faith that he's so great that he will, you know, he is the greatest shelter. Arjuna says that, Param Dhamma Pavitram Bhavam, that you are the Param Dhamma, you're the supreme shelter. You're the supreme shelter because you're the supreme personality. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, because you're the supreme person. Supreme. So, same. Gajendra is just how great you are, therefore, kindly protect, give me protection. Kindly give me protection. So it's a natural thing. It's a natural thing when we understand. Aham sarvasya prabhumata sarvam prabhata iti matto vajanteman bhutva bhava samambita. That naturally, when we understand that Krishna's position, the natural result of that is that we give ourselves in devotion to Krishna. It's natural. So therefore, it's important to study. You know, that's why so much is given in the Bhagavatam about Krishna's greatness, you know, and how devotees, all these stories over and over have a very consistent theme in terms of devotees coming to Krishna and establishing that loving relationship. But it comes to the realization of, well, how wonderful, how great Krishna is. And then, you know, establishing the full loving connection with Krishna. So, any comment or questions? Yes, bro.
Hare Krishna. I want to ask a question about how you're talking about how the universe is controlled and Krishna's playing. And at the same time, Krishna does intervene in the material world when it comes to his partiality toward his devotees. And there's a contradiction, an apparent contradiction in my mind regarding this aspect, in that, and I think it was like even in the last verse that you read from Bhagavad Gita, so Krishna, our faith, he intervenes in terms of faith. So our faith in Krishna comes by his mercy. And similarly, the faith of people who worship demigods, even Krishna, he says, he gives them that faith so that they may gradually elevate. Then at the same time, and this is where the contradiction arises, and I think it's related to the last verse you read. So, and there's two contradictions I find, and that's where Prabhupada says that it's in the Gita, or Nectar of Devotion, where Prabhupada says that anyone who rejects the conclusion of the Vedas is an atheist, the conclusion being that Krishna is the supreme worshipable personality of Godhead. So demigod worshippers, with their kind of compromised faith, is really atheism, and we can see that in their lifestyle and their mentality. And similarly, in the verse that's really there that you read, is that those who reject me or like leave me, I perpetually place into ignorance, so they face annihilation again and again. And this is I've kind of thought about this a lot, and I've heard different answers, and I want to ask, like, not everyone will go back to Godhead, because Krishna says, there are those who turn their backs to me, and Krishna places into ignorance to face annihilation again and again. So if Krishna has placed the living entity into ignorance to face annihilation perpetually, then this is something I don't understand. I don't know how to even ask a question about it, because it's really beyond my capacity to even question. You know what I'm saying?
You ever heard the definition of God as or part of the definition of God as that in which all conflicting truth becomes harmonious, or, you know, like that. So so that is the inconceivable nature of the personality of Godhead. So for us to understand, it's difficult to understand, because the perspective by which we're trying to understand is our reality. From the reality of Krishna, from this, the transcendental reality, which is eternal, this is like nothing. I mean, it's explained that, you know, many of us are defined in the scriptures as nitya bhatas, eternally conditioned. I mean, it sounds like, you know, the Christian, you know, thing, you're eternally in hell or something like that. Eternally, nitya bhata. Now, how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this nitya bhata is from the perspective of us in this material world, you know, it's like an eternity. And from the perspective of eternity, it's just a tiny speck. Now, if you take, just mathematically speaking, if you take a little portion, a little speck of eternity, a little fraction, what is a fraction of eternity is? It's eternal. You know, there's no, you can say, okay, a fraction of eternity is this number. No, it's eternity. It's eternal. So, but it's a fraction. So from that confusion that we have is that the way we see things is like this linear time. You know, and so we have to have something box. Well, how can you box eternity? So it's from the perspective of an eternal reality, This is just a moment of a bad dream. From the perspective of the experience itself, in the material world, is eternal. Now, it is explained that Anitya Bhata, by the mercy of a devotee, you know, Anitya Mukta personality, eternally liberated soul, then one can actually become, you know, free from whatever this situation. So Krishna is extremely involved, but that's the inconceivable part. He's extremely involved, and at the same time, he's not, but he is. But he's not, but he is. You know, so the actual fact is that he's really involved. He's really involved. He have that capacity. He have the capacity to be independent, you know, but at the same time be so involved that is really touching, you know. And when we start to get a sense of that, when we start to get, you know, how involved he is, how close to us he is, and how much he's trying for us to reawaken in our relationship with him, how much investment he has on that, and how many things he makes arrangements, you know, for us to receive that, is very touching. And then we have a sense of Krishna's kindness. You know, the experience that you as individuals that we have through Krishna's devotees, which are emissaries of Krishna. And then sometimes you think like that, you know, I mean, like, how much caring is there by Krishna's devotee towards you? You know, sometimes I think of my Guru Maharaj. You know, I'm just one of the little disciples among, you know, so many. But he still knows and cares, you know. And when there's always, you know, you feel the arrangement, the protection, like that. So that's how Krishna works. It's wonderful. It's wonderful, Krishna. So,
can I ask another question?
Yes, please.
Okay. This question, I want to verify whether this is a proper understanding or if this is just my speculation. One thing I was thinking about with Krishna? By the way, thank you for that answer. And I was going to ask about this partiality that Krishna has, and I was thinking that, because the devotees are so merciful, because we're here to help Krishna, to bring people back to him. And I was wondering if it's due to Krishna's partiality toward his devotees that when, like, for instance, I was a fallen soul, I didn't know who Krishna was, at least now I know who he is. So it was by his partiality toward the devotees who exposed me to Krishna consciousness that Krishna sort of helped me come out of ignorance. Because I was choosing ignorance, right? Is it, you know what I'm saying? So is it Krishna's partiality toward them, and I just got the sukriti of that? Do you see what I'm asking?
Yeah, that could be. Although, you know, many of us don't even feel, you know, that, hey, I was a devotee, you know, and then by Krishna being partial towards me, you know, then I was picked up. So, yeah, he's a lost devotee, let me pick him up, you know. Many of us have the experience of being like a lost soul that was somehow or other, you know, rescued. Because without Krishna's devotee just coming to us, I mean, you can't even imagine where you would be, you know, like that. So, is therefore so much praise and so much appreciation is given to the devotee. And the devotee simply represents Krishna's love. So in reality, it's again, you know, Parasha Shaktir, Krishna expands his inconceivable and unlimited capacity of caring for all living beings. You know, he plays that potency on his devotees. And through his devotees, you know, is perfectly executed. So therefore, you know, we praise Srila Prabhupada, you know, that he's an ocean of mercy. You know, we praise the devotees as, you know, as very kind, you know, what is it? Vancha kalpa taruvyasha, kripa sindhu vyayavacha, in an ocean of mercy. Because they care. They take all risks to reach and pick up people like many of us. So, and then here we are, they engage us, you know, in bringing that opportunity to others. And that's an amazing, you know, opportunity that some of us, you know, are given to assist those Kripa Sindhu personalities who are representing Krishna's supreme mercy to get the opportunity, like, you know, like that. So it's amazing. Any other comment or questions? Dr. Michiru.
So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he's telling all this to, you're speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because he's not envious of him. But for us, we're experiencing envy towards others, other devotees and other people. So what to speak of envy towards Krishna? How do we deal with these envious tendencies?
Well, the first thing is just to understand, how can you be envious of someone who is so great that is not even, you know, like, you know, I may be envious of something that, you know, of, you know, my brother who is, you know, is doing better than me or something like that. But when we talk about, you know, something beyond our dreams, you know, it's like, so understanding Krishna's position, you know, as being great. But in one sense too, you know, I mean, it's a certain condition of the heart, you know, that one has to become purified from. Sometimes it will take some good amount of prasadam and good amount of hearing, you know, kirtan to be able to take away those layers of envy that are there, those qualities, you know, that they're so, in, you know, ingrained on the Kali Yuga people, you know. So, but when one's hearts start to open, oh yeah, Krishna is great, you know, and just the faith start to up, you know, to grow, then one is ready for receiving devotional service. So the process is Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, and then Bhajana Kriya. So Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha, these two things build, you know, faith. And when that faith is built, you're ready to receive bhajan, you know, engage in bhajan, devotion, bhakti. All right, anything else? Thank you so much. Grantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.